today. Let me speak to the governor. Governor Gary Herbert spends 1 hour answering your questions. Call 801-575-8255. Live from the studios of KSL News Radio in Salt Lake City, it's Let Me Speak to the Governor.
It is so good to have you along here at KSL News Radio for Let Me Speak to the Governor. As most people know, when we are in the political season and the governor's chair is up for grabs, we put a little hiatus on this segment out of fairness to everybody who is participating. And this is the first Let Me Speak to the Governor program since the election of 2016. And Governor Herbert, it is good to have you here in studio, and thank you for joining us.
Well, it's great to be here, Doug. And by golly, you've got the best beard growing.
What do you think?
I think you look not quite like Santa Claus, but... But give you a few more weeks, I think you'll be there.
I keep telling people I'm going for Hemingway.
You kind of do look like Ernest Hemingway. You know, I see the resemblance there. And if you're as creative and as smart as Ernest Hemingway, which I know you are, you've got a bright future.
I've told my listeners I feel my IQ going up by the second. I think I'm up to 85 already. So I think...
I like the trend. I like the trend. You're going in the right direction.
At least
that's good.
It's going up. Governor, a sincere welcome. It's been a while since we've had this opportunity. And by the way, for our listeners that are out there, we always want to remind you of the number to call. And you can simply dial 801-575-8255 so you can directly talk to the governor of the state of Utah and ask your questions. And Governor, perhaps I'd like to give you just a moment or two, since we haven't chatted for such a long time and this program has been on hiatus during the election season, just a quick update from the governor's office.
Well, I'm sure that all the listeners out there have got on their nightstand my State of the State address.
And underlined and circled.
Underlined and circled, and it may help them with insomnia, but the simple answer is the state of Utah is exceptional. We are doing very, very well in virtually any measurable way. Our economy is the best in America, the most diversified, healthiest economy in America today. Our growth of the economy, our GDP growth, is more than twice the national average. Unemployment rate is at 3.1%. We have great quality of life. We have the largest middle class in America today per capita. And we have what we call upward mobility, which is really the American dream, is the best here in Utah of any place in America. So a lot of good things going. That does not mean we don't have challenges out there. Education funding is a big issue for me, and we need to put more money into education. Certainly, if we want to have continued long-term economic expansion, having a skilled labor force is critical to that effort. Two, I know that there are parts of Utah, particularly rural Utah, which some have some real challenges economically, and where we might have a really low unemployment rate here on the Wasatch Front. Out in the Uinta Basin, we might have, 10% unemployment rate because so much reliance on energy out there. So we need to find ways with rural Utah to diversify the economy and have them have the same opportunities we have here. So anyway, I think it's a great place to be. We are the envy of most all the states. We're doing some really good things. And if we continue to work together, I think we can, no reason why this good run can't continue.
We'll go to our phone lines after I ask this initial question. You are going to be going back to Washington, D.C. I'm sure several topics will be on hand. We're hearing also concerns about future plans for the Department of Education and also Bears Ears, public lands. Maybe you could give us a little preview of what you're anticipating when you do travel on behalf of Utah to Washington.
Well, some of it is a little unknown because we have a new administration, so we don't exactly know how the Trump-Pence administration will host us, although we are scheduled to have the same kind of dinner. We usually have a dinner with them in the evening, usually Sunday evening, and then we have kind of a more two on 50 when we meet with them as governors, and we have a little question and answer period and opportunities to have some dialogue. We also, though, have the opportunity to meet with senior staff, with some of their cabinet members, and to talk about things uniquely Utah. We will get together with our western governor states. And so the Intermountain West, which is, again, bipartisan, Republican and Democrat alike, and talking about some of the unique things in Utah. So there's a lot of opportunities to work with this new administration, have dialogue with the governors amongst the governors, but also help bring the Trump-Pence administration up to speed on the needs and the wishes of the governors.
As you might be aware, Governor, today in the newscasts, it is being said that you are going back there to express an interest in having the Department of Education go away. First of all, is that accurate, and what are your thoughts?
Well, it's mostly accurate from the standpoint of I was asked a question, do you support what Congressman Chaffetz and six other co-sponsors of a bill to do away with the Department of Education? And actually, I've been consistent about this back in the George W. Bush days, when I had some concerns about the No Child Left Behind initiative that he proposed. May worked well in Texas, but I didn't think it was going to be good on a national one-size-fits-all scale. I don't like that approach. And when they called and asked me about my opposition to No Child Left Behind, they asked me if I was a Republican. I said, yeah, I'm a Reagan Republican who would do away with the Department of Education. I don't see a great purpose for the Department of Education. They usually just take our money and add strings to it. And I think the education, as the Department of Education does say in their own bylaws, their primary role to educate our children comes from the states and local government at that local level. The Department of Education just spends $65 billion and put strings on the money that's coming to the states, and I just think it's a waste of time and effort.
Let's take some phone calls, and I'm looking down at some of the topics our listeners would like to chat with you about, and boy, quite a few are on education, including this one from James. James, say hello to the governor.
Hello, Governor.
Hi, James. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Hanging right in there. Thank you.
Yeah, my question was, what is Utah going to do to increase pay for teachers, and also increase or try to combat the teacher shortage we have in the state? I know that's a big problem, and I wanted to know what is our government going to do looking forward to solving the problem of teacher shortage and the problem with teacher pay.
Well, it's probably a multi-pronged answer to that, because there is no single thing you can do that solves the problem. There's no silver bullet out there. We need to recognize that the competition is keen for our labor force. We have shortages not only in teachers, but in engineers and scientists and technicians and different fields out there, aerospace, life science. So part of the challenge we have with a healthy economy and low unemployment is the worry about who's going to fill the pipeline of demand for labor. So we need to increase our educational achievement, because those who are unemployed could find a job if they had the skills and education necessary. Our teachers have skills, and in comparison to those educational achievements they've made, they're finding other opportunities besides just being in the classroom. And that means we are going to have pressure to increase our total compensation package to our teachers. I think people are aware of that. And that's why we are asking the legislature and my budget proposal to increase the weighted pupil unit, which is the basic unit of how we fund education and our teachers' salaries, and hopefully they'll respond to that. But we also are looking at ways to enhance revenue that we can, in fact, direct into the education. We have a goal of $1 billion over 5 years. We're in the second year of that. It means you have to average $200 million per year for public education alone. And the good news, we're about $45 million to the good on that quest. And we also understand that more and more are going, as per our design, into higher education. We need to put about another $275 million into higher education over these next 4 years to meet their demands. So I think everybody understands that we need to have more revenue, and we need to understand that we need to pay the teachers more. And along with that ought to come a healthy thank you and a spirit and an attitude of gratitude for the service that they're doing, because we're getting really good results out of our public education system for the little bit of money that we're giving to them to work with.
You're listening to Let Me Speak to the Governor here at KSL News Radio. Let's go ahead and take just a brief break, and we'll come right back. We'll take more questions for Governor Gary Herbert here at KSL News Radio on Let Me Speak to the Governor.
The governor answers your questions. Utah's most important issues on Let Me Speak to the Governor.
We so appreciate Governor Gary Herbert joining us here in studio to take your questions and your phone calls. And again, we have been in hiatus for a little while because of the election season. And Governor, with your permission, I'm going to go right back to the phone lines. We've got a lot of people waiting to chat with you.
Very good. Thank you, Doug.
Let's go to this phone call from Provo, Utah. And Al is on the line. Al, what's your question?
Well, good afternoon, Doug, and good afternoon, Governor. My question is, in the wake of the CEO's pouting over the Outdoor Retailers show, my question is specifically, are you concerned about that sort of fever spreading to, say, sports teams, et cetera, just boycotting over any old grievance, whether real or imagined? And I just feel it's unfair and impedes interstate commerce as well as Utah commerce. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, people have the freedom of speech, and so that's part of this issue, and people have points of view and opinions, and they want to express them whatever way they can. I'm not too happy about boycotting. I think that's not the best way to resolve problems. I think the best way to resolve problems and difference of opinions is to sit down together and have a constructive dialogue. I would say in most instances, whatever the issue is, we generally have more agreement than disagreement, and there's opportunities to build on that common ground. Certainly that's true with the Outdoor Retailer Show and our efforts on public lands, which is one that we've enhanced clearly for the 20 years that the Outdoor Retailer Show trade show has been here. It's about tripled in size, and it's a great venue, a good location. We have 35-plus million wonderful, beautiful acres of public land, 15 million more than, for example, our neighbor to the east, Colorado. So we have a lot to offer. We're going to have a discussion on that particular issue with the leaders of the Outdoor Industry Association and see if we can't, in fact, find ways to move forward together. That remains to be seen, but we'll give it our best efforts and present our case, and that's what we need to do as a state.
Let's take another phone call. This time we go to Roy, Utah, and Doug is on the line for Governor Herbert. Doug, welcome.
Hi.
Hey, Doug.
I have a question for you regarding teacher licensing. Two of them specifically. There's requirements for teacher testing, and teachers already take two tests. They take Praxis 1 to get their provisional license, and then Praxis 2 to get their standard license. Why are we proposing more tests for teachers to get certified? Second question I have for you is, why are we not allowing teachers to govern themselves? I mean, the police are governed by posts. You have EMS that's regulated by EMS providers. You have all your lawyers by the board, the
bar.
And then you have the medical professional that's regulated by the medical providers themselves.
Okay, let's get the governor's response to that.
Well, those are good questions, Doug. I'll answer it just in reverse order. One, the governance is outlined in our Constitution and our statutes. And so our state school board has oversight responsibility and the need to develop the standards that we as a people of Utah think are necessary to have a high school graduation and a diploma. We have local school boards that, in fact, are elected by the people, as is the state school board, elected by the people, and their charge is to, in fact, develop curriculum. And they have a lot of flexibility there as far as what that curriculum is, and by extension, gives some flexibility to the teacher. We certainly see in the classroom a lot of different approaches as far as how we teach, and the principal has to oversee that as well as the superintendent of that school district, of which we have 41. And I can tell you they're not the same. They are different. So the oversight and the governing, the legislature comes in from the standpoint of they control the money. And they're the ones that fund it. And sometimes with the legislature, if we're going to give you money, they want to say, okay, let's make sure that there's openness and transparency, that we're spending money appropriate ways. And they don't always get it right, by the way, and that's why there's always some kind of change and modification and at least an attempt to improve. But I do believe that we need to listen more to those in the classroom, the teachers, and understand what they are saying and what their challenges are. They are on the front lines, and I think too often their voices have been ignored, which I think is to our own detriment. So that being said, we are fostering an opportunity here to have better dialogue with teachers, with the Utah Education Association, with those who represent our school boards, our superintendents association, the principals, parents, and the business community all coming together. We're in the process of developing a 10-year education plan, which will give us a direction and a plan going forward over these next 10 years, so we're not so divided, so we're more together, we're more united and focused on what we can do to raise the bar for education achievement in the state. I think we do that, we'll be in good shape. And again, I think our teachers are doing just a wonderful job. We ought not to burden them with too much teaching certification tests, but enough to make sure that they are qualified to teach.
You're listening to Let Me Speak to the Governor, a chance for you to talk with Governor Gary Herbert. The phone number is 801-575-8255. And this time we go to, let's go to Cindy, who's joining us from Utah County. Cindy, go ahead with your question.
Hi, Governor. I just want to thank you for the positive tone that you use each time you speak about our teachers, I'm a parent with kids in our public schools, and I appreciate that. I have a question as far as your stance on supporting possibly getting rid of the Department of Education. Some parents have expressed concern because a lot of what it does is provide some protections to some of our most vulnerable populations in special education, Title I, historically desegregation, because our states historically weren't great at doing that on their own. I'm wondering how you would respond to those parents' concerns. And then just a follow-up question, wondering how you feel about the legislation that was passed kind of in the 11th hour last year for partisan school board elections. Seems like polls show most of our state prefers direct nonpartisan school board elections, and yet there's legislation that's held in the House committee. It just can't get out. They won't let it out just even for a debate. Wondering what your opinion is on those two issues.
Well, thank you. Again, our teachers are doing a great job. Actually, all the stakeholders are doing a good job, our superintendents, our principals. We have been identified by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, for example, of having the best return on taxpayer investment for education of any place in America today. That's a tribute to our parents, to our students, and certainly to those who have to provide the educational environment. Let me talk about the Department of Education. Don't misconstrue my desire or belief that we can do without the Department of Education to any way, shape, or form. Think that we don't need to have monies that are being assembled in Washington, D.C. to be, in fact, dispersed back to the states. I'd prefer them to be in a block grant form. Nobody cares about Utah's children more than Utahns. And we, before the Department of Education, which came into being about, 1979 under Jimmy Carter, we were getting funds to help with some of our vulnerable populations and a desire to have more equalization of our educational efforts so that whether you're in a rural or an urban area, you had a good quality education. There's no reason why that can't continue. I just feel like that the Department of Education is wasting money and adding strings to funds that we ought to be able to take here in Utah, and we decide how to spend the money in the most important and viable way. And that's why I believe in local control here in the state. I think that the school districts and the local school boards have the ability, in fact, to make those decisions in behalf of their region, which are unique. If you're down in San Juan County, where we have a very high Native American population, about 98% Navajo, they have a little different culture and different view of things than, say, you'd have in Provo School District, where we have a growing Hispanic population, or, say, up in Bountiful, where it's maybe mostly Caucasian. Again, the regional differences are real, and we ought not to come up with one-size-fits-all solutions that make it hard to in fact, adapt to the needs of the students. So that's all I'm talking about. And as far as the partisanship, I've recommended in the past that the best thing we could do to select school boards is let the governor make the decision. You can put some parameters on me. I care about the overall well-being. I'm not regionalized. I have to care about, you know, all 3 million plus people of Utah and all 41 different school districts. You could put parameters on how and what discipline, where they should come from in business and education, and allow me to at least appoint good people to the state school board. I think we would get a good balance there of what we need to have, and it doesn't have to be partisan wrangling.
Let's take a brief break here at the bottom of the hour. We will come right back with Let Me Speak to the Governor here at KSL News Radio.
Reach out to Governor Herbert. Text 57500 or call him at 801-575-8255. It's Let Me Speak to the Governor.
It's been a while since we've had a Let Me Speak to the Governor because of the election season. We put it on hiatus when people are running for a particular office. And, Governor, it is good to have you back. And
hey, we have four more years of fun.
Four more years, Doug.
So I'll start growing my beard out. Pull an Abraham Lincoln.
Or you could go a Governor Spry look.
There you go.
You know? I mean, some of the great old governors, they had rather frosty beards.
My wife used to like it when I had a mustache, but
I heard you looked like Tom Selleck.
Exactly. That's what I kept saying.
I look like Santa Claus, and he looks like Tom Selleck. Let's go back to our phone lines, and Paul is joining us on the line. And Paul, what's your question for Governor Herbert?
Yeah, thanks, Governor Herbert.
Thank you, Paul.
Yes, thank you. I think you're doing a great job. I just have a question. I watch the news quite a bit, and I'm originally from the Washington D.C. area, and most of the newscasts are just very anti-Trump. It seems like he can do nothing right. There's always something negative, negative, negative. And maybe you're familiar with George Soros. There's evidence he's actually funded a lot of these protests that have turned into riots. He's actually paying people for this. And then I heard that President Obama is actually setting up kind of clandestine groups to oppose what President Trump's trying to do. I've never seen a president in history that's had this much opposition from the media and from other politicians, from people in the other party, and from people in his party. Just wondering, what's your take on this? Do you support President Trump in general, and what do you think about all this opposition?
Okay, let's get the governor's response to that.
Well, it's a unique time in our country. We certainly are divided as a country. That's unfortunate. Even President Obama said in his last State of the Nation was that I wanted to unite the people, and yet we're more divided now than ever. So he recognized the division amongst the people. That seems to be continuing with the Trump administration. Certainly a rule of thumb in politics is don't give your enemies a club to hit you over the head with, and some of the rhetoric out there gives people reason to pounce on the rhetoric and maybe not on the substance of what the rhetoric was supposed to, focus on. So, again, I have a good friend in Mike Pence, the vice president, who I have a lot of regard for. And I've told him, I think you have a significant challenge because you have a person, well-intentioned as he may be, that has no experience. And he's never run for office before, really. He's never been elected to office before. And now, all of a sudden, he finds himself the leader of the free world, the most powerful politician in the world. And that's quite a contrast to what he's been doing in the past. So I expect him to stub his toes a few times along the way and scrape his knee. Hopefully he'll learn along the way. I was asked this question earlier today about Trump, and I said, hey, it's like asking you to do some plumbing work at my house, and you've never been a plumber before. I guess I shouldn't be too surprised if you pick up the wrong wrench now and again. So I cut him a little slack. I think there's an opportunity in two areas for the Trump administration to really make good strides, positive, in behalf of all Americans. One is his appointments. It's not just the Supreme Court, but getting appointments to the federal bench, which has been so politicized over the past number of years that I think we have way too much activism. I don't care whether it's on the right or the left, there ought not to be any. And yet we see it taking place. So good appointments to the judiciary, including the Supreme Court, is really an important thing. Appointments to staff, appointments to cabinet members, those are important things that will help us get the right thing done. My good friend, former governor of Texas, Rick Perry, is over energy. I've talked with him. I think there's an opportunity for us to have a balanced approach and a rational approach that's environmentally sensitive, by the way, when it comes to energy development in this country. So I think that's a good appointment. Last but not least, I do believe that President Trump understands what should be the elevated role of the states. We've kind of been diminished as kind of a junior partner when we are, in fact, co-equal with the federal government, and we ought to be utilized as a partner in developing policy. The states really are the ones that are finding solutions unique to their own populations. And so if President Trump will allow the states to have an elevated role in policy and in solving the people of America's challenges and problems, we can have actually a very productive next 4 years. So those two things are what I'm going to emphasize as we get back to Washington. I'm going back next week to visit with the president and the vice president, with the other governors as part of our National Governors Association meetings. And I think that'll be two of the things that we'll emphasize in a bipartisan way, by the way.
Let's go to Marvin, who is on the line in Brigham City, with this reminder that we do have several lines available at 575-8255, area code 801, of course, 575-8255, so you can speak with the governor. And Marvin, what's your question for Governor Herbert?
Hi, Doug and Governor. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank
you. My question is every time the legislature is in session, like the past 10 years, all we hear about is the shortfall of the education money and dollars. And there's a very simple solution to this, and it's the Powerball lottery that's held in several states that are adjacent to Utah. There are several people that leave the state to go purchase the lottery tickets and say they go to Idaho. They're supporting the school districts in Idaho. Why don't we keep that money in Utah? I'll hang up and let you please give me a rebuttal.
Well, thank you, Marvin. And I don't know so much as a rebuttal as maybe an explanation. I think that the idea of a lottery is one that has mixed reviews. The states that have them, some like it, some don't like it. There's an element that comes along with gambling that sometimes is a little unseemly. Not that those who play lottery are unseemly people, but there's what happens when you open the doors to gambling. And that's the concern that I think most of we have in Utah, because we're one of only two states that does not have any ability to have gambling. And once you open it up, then you end up having opportunities for casinos, our reservations. We've already had indications that some on the Indian reservations would say, if we have gambling in Utah, we're going to bring in a casino. And there's just the culture of Utah doesn't seem to warrant and support that. And that's really the end of the day. It's we are a representative form of government. We need to reflect the principles and the values and develop policies that reflect the will of the people and the majority, as at the same time protecting the needs of the minority under our Constitution. That's a challenging balancing act, but I don't think that we have really any time soon here a demand from the public to say we need to have a lottery. Having more money and more revenue, and there's certainly options out there. There might be six or eight different ways to go about this, of which the lottery is one. And I expect as we talk about tax reform and the need for more revenue, particularly for education, it's certainly one of those that will be talked about, at least on the list. But I think it would be found at the very bottom of the list right now with the culture of Utah.
We have Brian, who is joining us on the line from Roy, Utah. And Brian, go ahead with your question for the governor.
Hello, Governor. Thank you for taking the time to speak with your constituents.
Thank you, Brian.
I just wanted to know what kind of plans are in place to help clean the air in the Wasatch Front. It's a big problem, and I was really concerned when we were trying to get with Chaffetz and talk to him about it, and there seems to be some disconnect, and he was saying that people were brought in and whatnot from out of state to just throw a wrench in the whole talk, but anyway.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's
air quality.
Sure.
Brian, well, thank you for your call, and I can't comment on Congressman Chaffetz and the town hall meeting. I think if anything that we learn, we ought to be civil, and that's a two-way requirement for us as elected officials and those we dialogue with to make sure we're civil and respectful in our tone. I think we'll get more accomplished with that. When it comes to air pollution, we have a problem. And it's a significant issue, certainly impacting the health and well-being of our population, certainly along the Wasatch Front, but not only along the Wasatch Front. We have air quality challenges up in the Cache Valley. We have air challenges in the airshed in the Uinta Basin. And we certainly have an acute problem here along the Wasatch Front. What has been done and what we are doing is to, in fact, find ways to reduce pollution into the air. We have a uniqueness in that although we've reduced our pollution so that we are the lowest polluting per capita metropolitan area in America, when you have this lid of inversion, even though you're polluting less, it captures and eventually it stores up and we have gunky air. So that's not an excuse, by the way. That's just the facts that we have to deal with. We've put 30 different regulations on place to mandate that industry and commercial enterprises have best available technology. And with that effort, we've reduced our pollution levels over the last 12 years by 30%. That's a 46% reduction per capita of our pollutants in the air. So that means that we are actually cleaner now than we were 10 years ago. So that's a good trend. Doesn't mean we should be satisfied, but that's a good trend, and we're doing a lot with industry and commercial enterprise. Where we still have more to do is, in fact, with our own personal responsibilities in this effort, particularly with automobiles. About 50% of all the pollution you see in the gunky days out there, of which we have on average about 18, and sometimes it'll be the worst air in America, but many more times we're the best air in America, so we ought not to forget the good side. But 18 days is too many, and we have pollution that comes out of our tailpipes. We're trying to work with our refineries and others to bring in lower sulfur fuels. That's working. That will happen. We call them Tier 3 fuels. Tesoro, for example, is indicated they'll bring those in. We should meet all the federal requirements and mandates by 2019 to meet federal standards. So I feel good about the trend, but it's going to be a shared responsibility. We need to use our mass transit, of which we've spent billions of dollars on, to allow people to have abilities to park your car and carpool or take the tracks or the front runner. And if we do that, we can do a lot towards cleaning up the air that we have and reduce pollution even more.
Governor Jay is joining us on the line right now from Salt Lake City. Jay, what's your question?
Yeah, thank you for having me on the show. I wanted to know what you on the possibility of bringing legalized motorcycle lane splitting to the state of Utah. I've seen a lot of studies about it in the past, and the overwhelming result is it shows decrease in emissions and increase in safety of the riders, as well as decrease in congestion. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on the possibility of that coming to Utah.
Well, I haven't heard about it till now, Jay, so it may not be on anybody's radar screen, and you're bringing it to our attention. I understand, if I understand correctly, you're talking about a divided lane or a designated lane for just motorcycles only?
No, I'm talking about legalizing motorcycles driving basically down the line between lanes.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. So take advantage of the gaps between the automobiles. I guess it's something we ought to think about, and I expect it's being done in other places. I was on a trade mission to one of the South American countries, and they had more motorcycles, it seemed like, than they had automobiles, and they were zipping down between cars and down the lines. And the law enforcement people said, you know, we have about 5 deaths a day because of the high congestion and motorcycles just zipping around. So I would need to be really convinced that the public safety is not being jeopardized if we had that kind of motorcycle ability. And so I'm probably not ready to make any statement on a position. I'm happy to look at it, but I would have concerns about the public safety, not only of the motorcyclist, but of what they would do to endanger other traffic and other competing in automobiles and trucks out there. So maybe we can look at it, but what I've seen in South America was not impressive.
Governor, there is one issue that I'm aware of, and there may be more, but this one I'm aware of on Capitol Hill, and that is the idea of requiring helmets for those up to the age of 21 instead of just 18. Is that something that you're supporting?
Well, I haven't taken a position on that. Again, it's about public safety. We have some in the motorcycle group that say, you know, helmets end up making them less safe because they don't have the visibility. I think most people have come down on the fact that it's a trade-off, and we are making helmets that are a lot more able to have good visibility and still protect you if you happen to have a crash, and the impact on your head is less. So I'm a kind of a pro helmet guy. I would never think of being on a motorcycle without a helmet. I do ride occasionally with some of our highway patrol troopers, but it's always with a helmet. And I think there is some maturity that comes And I guess I know we consider people to be in their majority, an adult when they're 18. And the question really is there more maturity so you can make the decision to wear or not to wear after you're 21? My decision is you ought to wear them.
Let's take a brief break. Let me speak to the governor here at KSL News Radio. We appreciate Governor Gary Herbert joining us. We'll come back. We'll take some questions. We'll also share some of the text questions that have come in as well, all here on Let Me Speak to the Governor.
Time for our final segment, the Let Me Speak to the Governor quick Q&A.
The quick Q&A.
Not the slow Q&A, but the quick.
That's right. Let's take one really quick question, okay, because this is something to do with what the legislature is dealing with, and it's one of our quick questions that came in as well. But, Jerry, and I'll ask you to keep this very brief, but it's an important question. Go ahead.
Yes. I'm concerned about the lowering of the DUI limit to 0.05, giving criminal records to average citizens that might, you know, only have a couple beers at dinner.
Well, I think there is concern. Are we doing the right thing in the right way? We would be the first state in America to lower it to 0.05. We're at 0.08 now, which is a common benchmark. Some countries in Europe have it at 0.05, and they think it's worked very well for them. They probably don't have as many people driving like we're kind of married to our automobiles out here, and so it may be a little different culture in that regard. I think some of the argument is, right or wrong, good or bad, is that it's like posting the speed limit at 60 miles an hour knowing that you're going to drive 70. People are not going to pull you over unless they see some erratic behavior, some deviant driving. And then they could ask you to do a breathalyzer or test you for alcohol content. So I think the people promoting this would say this is kind of a preventive effort to get in front of this. So we know you're going to drink more than this anyway, but if you know that's a concern, you're going to be a little reluctant, more reluctant at least, to get behind the wheel when you're at 0.08 and drive.
Let's talk about another alcohol-related issue, and this is the everybody uses a different term, but the most common term is the Zion Curtain. What are your thoughts on the Zion Curtain and what its future will be and should be in the state?
Well, we call it the preparation wall. And our emphasis on alcohol reform, and I think it's time to take a look at our alcohol laws and regulations, the emphasis should be for all of us on public health and public safety. And what works ought to be kept and enhanced, maybe. And what doesn't work ought to be jettisoned, and let's do something else with our time and efforts. So we're spending a lot of effort in alcohol review to say we need to have more education for underage drinking, for our young people to understand the dangers of drinking underage and the impact it has on your health and your well-being. We need to have more emphasis on law enforcement to get the impaired drivers off the roads. They cause people to die. And most of the things we have involved out there are alcohol-related, so it's a real issue. And those enhanced enforcements and education, I think, are going to pay and have paid great dividends. We just need to do more of it. If in the process we end up removing the preparation wall as part of this overall review, so be it. But the emphasis ought to be on public safety and public health.
Medical cannabis, what is the future? It seems like the focus this year is basically opening the door to research. Your thoughts on this?
Well, I think research is where it starts. I've been disappointed and somewhat critical of the past administration because they've turned a blind eye to the law. Say, well, we know we have federal laws on the books, but we're not going to enforce them, and we're going to, in fact, ignore them because we think recreational marijuana or medical marijuana is okay. Well, it may be, but we ought to have science to back it up. And if we don't like the laws, let's change the laws. How you change the laws is doing research so you've got good data to back up the policy you're trying to do. In Utah, I think we're happy to have medicinal use of marijuana. Let's just have some science to back it up so we get the right policy and have it as a controlled substance distributed by pharmacists and prescribed by a medical doctor.
I probably should have asked this earlier, but I know that Utah's booming economy is a wonderful thing, but on one hand, it's frustrating because we're not getting the tax revenue that should come with an economy that is booming the way ours is. And I've only left you with a little less than a minute here, Governor. What can we do to get that tax revenue?
Well, it needs a federal fix. And frankly, as we mores have changed on how we shop, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce says now 50% of us now buy our goods over the internet, online. And we've had a law in the books in Utah since 1938, which many states have had similar laws, where you owe the tax on the goods that you've purchased online, but we're not. There's no mechanism to collect them. Go to brick and mortar, just part of it, ring it up, we give you your credit card, and you pay it. Well, Congressman Chaffetz actually, coincidentally, has the bill called the Remote Transaction Parity Act. It has broad-based support, bipartisan support from governors, certainly in Congress and the Senate. It's being held up by one individual in Congress. I'm going to be talking to Mitch McConnell about this here next week and see if we can't get this logjam eliminated. Let's get it passed. The public overwhelmingly wants it. It's got bipartisan support, and it allows us in a very sensible way to collect monies that are owed and not let people cheat the system inadvertently or otherwise.
Governor, it's good to have this opportunity back. Let me speak to the governor. We'll be doing this every month in some form or fashion, and I appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you. I can hardly wait. It's going to be a great